Welcome, everyone. It's good to be back in this venue in this way. Although I see so many faces that I was able to see in person quite recently, which is a lovely thing. Just taking you all in. There was someone recently in one of the retreats. I can't remember who it was, very kindly. I think it was when I was in Madison. Pardon me. And so I was kind of at the end of my travel time. And I must have been looking weary because the person said, you don't have to work so hard to prepare. We just want you to come and smile at us anyway. So as I was sitting earlier, it's like, well, maybe my work is done, you know. So we could take it easy, but we could offer more. So we'll begin our sitting, and I'll offer a little reflections during our sitting from the two retreats in Austin and in Madison. A little reminder for those who were there and an echo for those who were not. Simply sitting together in this way, not waiting, not getting busy in complex meditation structures, just sitting in Zazen. Is a kind of acknowledgement of the universality of everyday life, everyday suffering, everyday fear, of our suffering. As you sit, maybe you might notice your reluctance to face all that flows through you and as you. And how any reluctance that we meet sets in motion a whole new set of things, a whole new set of burdens that we carry. It just seems to be the way it is. This was the Buddha's first teaching. But at the very same time, as we sit, Zazen, our posture and our willingness to sit upright and silently together, isn't just the acknowledgement of the universality of human suffering. It's not personal. Often it's just universal situation. But we also must remember that Zazen is the Buddha space. You're sitting to fill in the Buddha space of unlimited and unconditioned wisdom, acceptance, courage, and compassion. You might not have thought of it in this way, but that's what you're enacting right now, in this moment. Your body sitting upright is the Buddha space of unlimited and unconditioned wisdom, acceptance, courage, compassion. And this sitting, our Zazen, is the Dharma gate that opens in response to our longing or thirst for freedom from unnecessary suffering. And our warm longing for a generous care that we might receive and also offer in the face of our hesitations and fears. All of this is present. The universality of suffering, the universality of freedom. We sit down, take our posture. We sit down with others as a simple acknowledgement of sometimes I hurt, and sometimes you hurt too. And we sit upright in silent stillness as a way of expressing the larger truth that nothing is missing, nothing's lacking, nothing more is needed, and that with each breath, as we sit down and sit upright. With each breath, we're affirming our commitment. Something like, I'm willing to sit in this way. I'm willing to take the Buddha's shape that is my body. There's not some other shape. I'm willing to sit and take the Buddha shape that is my body, noticing how I can get caught in the desire for it all to be different, better. You notice that voice that says, please, not this. And at the very same time, in the very same place of your sitting, comes in moments the confidence that this very body is the Buddha, even when it doesn't feel like that, even when that doesn't make any sense. So we just take care of our breath and take care of our posture and allow awakening to take care of itself. Just sitting down, sitting upright, taking care of your breath, taking care of your posture. Acknowledging this apparent but illusory distinction between suffering and freedom. And sometimes we summarize this by saying, oh, there's a choice between fear and love. We met this in our recent retreats. Don't think that's exactly the choice. We're not choosing between two polarized states. Breathing in and breathing out. We all live in an ocean of fear and an ocean of love. And it's the same ocean. In the Heart Sutra, we sometimes chant, without hindrance, the mind has no fear. Free from confusion, those who lead all to liberation embody profound serenity. And we chant that line and think, oh, good, without hindrance, my mind will have no fear. And of course, there's truth in that. But the next line, those who lead all to liberation embody profound serenity. sitting as you're sitting right now, together. We're leading each other to profound serenity in the midst of all of our suffering. And this is composure. This is composure, not dissociation or repression or ignoring the difficulties of life. This is seeing it all through and seeing through it all, appreciating it all, opening to it all, which offers us a new gateway, not just freedom from suffering, but the restoration of joy. A joy beyond ordinary happiness, and also beyond our personal preferences for happiness. Just taking care of your breath. Take care of your posture. And sometimes our hindrances and entanglements of our habits do begin to soften a bit. The mind isn't caught so much in fear, not distracted by fear, not lost in fear. Also, not caught by what we call love, not distracted by love, not lost in love. That's not the polarity. Composure allows the entire world to unfold without you being caught by your personal preferences for it to be one way or another. Love and fear are like entangled lovers, and they move together. In Buddha's mind and heart, they're not two. To face one is to face the other. So we say, to understand suffering, we learn to love. To understand real love, we learn to face suffering. Sitting down, sitting upright, taking care of your posture and your breath. So cloaked in Buddha's body, we chant, vast is the robe of liberation, a formless field of benefaction. Wearing the universal teaching, I realize the one true nature, thus harmonizing all being. Vast is the robe of liberation, a formless field of benefaction. Wearing the universal teaching, I realize one true nature, thus harmonizing all being. Vast is the robe of liberation, a formless field of benefaction. Wearing the universal teaching, I realize the one true nature, thus harmonizing all being. It's wonderful to sit with you again in this space. As I said, I wanted to remind those of you who are in either or in some places both retreats of our study and our intimacy with Zazen and with the sitting down and standing up in the world. And so that was a bit of a inner tour of some of those places that we practiced and studied together. I'll say just a couple more things. One of those little tours that I take you on sometimes because it was so powerful to me. A very well-known American author, philosopher, theologian, Christian mystic, really, educator, civil rights leader, Howard Thurman, says a lot of you are quite familiar with his teachings, I'm sure. But in reading something recently, there was a quote from him I'd not heard before, and I was just floored by it. I wanted to offer it. I spoke about it in one of the retreats. And I want to say a little bit about the talk and then get your responses to it. Because the reason I offer it is because it's another languaging of what we're just sitting with and what this is an inquiry. This is from a commencement address that Thurman gave the year before he died. It was at Spelman College. It's a woman's university. Men don't, at least then they didn't go there. Mostly African American. This was given in May of 1980. He died the following year. Here's a small piece, and then I'm going to say a little more. His words. So, as I live my life, he said, this is what I'm trying to fulfill. And remember, he's speaking to college kids and their parents and faculty. He said, as I live my life, this is what I'm trying to fulfill. It doesn't matter whether I become a doctor, lawyer, housewife. I'm secure because I hear the sound of the genuine in myself. And having learned to listen to that, I can become quiet enough, still enough, to hear the sound of the genuine in you. Now, if I hear the sound of the genuine in me, and if you hear the sound of the genuine in you, it is possible for me to go down in me and come up in you. So that when I look at myself through your eyes, having made that pilgrimage, I see in me what you see in me, and the wall that separates and divides will disappear. And we will become one because the sound of the genuine makes the same music. Isn't that amazing? It's so gorgeous, and it so reflects what we're doing here, but it only makes sense. And I'll read it again. It only makes sense if you practice in the way that I just invited us to practice. It's practice-based. Otherwise, it's like, what? You know, if you look up the definition of the genuine, it's what's authentically you, what's most authentic. We call it, you know, Buddha nature or self-energy or Zazen, the shape of the Buddha's body. So just for fun, for a few minutes, I'm going to take little excerpts from his speech that led up to that beautiful quote, because I just think it's beautiful to see an elder in action. Ed, because I know you work with this group, that's elders. And so these are just tiny little spots I took out of the whole talk, and I'll come back because it shows the what I was just recommending that we focus on is the everyday suffering and everyday freedom that aren't separated. He began by the usual thing that a speaker would say at such a commencement. He said, "Miss President," and I love that, "Miss President, and everybody else, I'm very glad to be in this chapel again," because he was speaking in a chapel where he'd been before. And he said, "There's so many funny kinds of memories hanging around these walls that it's hard for me to get my mind together. It's hard for me to get my mind together. It's such a vulnerability, you know." And he says, "I'm glad to be here, and I won't waste any more time on little talk. You know this is a very difficult moment, so let's get to work." That's much better. So he starts out with this mature, like a grandfather talking to you, a mature stance, an elder's offering. You know this isn't going to be an ordinary offering. Warm and yet going straight to what's needed. And you begin to get a hint that this is not an ordinary person with an ordinary message, you know. Did you hear that? It's like, okay, here we go. And he's both saying, "Let's get to work, it's important," and "It's hard for me to get myself together here." So if you recall the language I was just using in Zazen, he says next, "There is in every person something that waits and listens for the sound of the genuine in herself." And remember when this was given, the sound of the genuine in herself. And just a side note, he says, "I should ask you to forgive me for not getting all these sex terms right. Just remember my generation. That's all I ask you to do because I'm trying to be yours." Humility, empathy, kindness, more bodhisattva evidence, you know. And then he speaks for a while and he comes back to this theme. He says, "There is in you something that waits and listens for the sound of the genuine in yourself. Nobody like you has ever been born." And almost parenthetically, he says, I didn't say thank goodness. "Nobody like you has ever been born. And no one like you will ever be born again. You're the only one. And if you miss the sound of the genuine in you, you will be a cripple all the rest of your life. Because you will never be able to get a scent of who you are." He's playful in that grandfatherly tone, but then he's fierce also. You don't want to be caught in the self-centered dream. If you're caught in the self-centered dream, you'll never know who you are. And then he makes a reference, one of the only ones that's somewhat religious, and I want to use it here, not because it's a biblical story, but because of what it points to. He says, "Do you remember in the book, Jesus and his disciples were going through the woods and the hills, and they appeared in a turn in the road, and they saw this man who is possessed of devils, that they thought. And then Jesus met the fellow, and Jesus asked him one question, 'Who are you? What's your name?'" And for a moment, the man that was possessed, he said this tilted his tilted mind righted itself. And he said, "Oh, that's it. The man who's, I don't know. There are legions of me and they riot in my streets. If I only knew, then I would be whole." So it's, old language, but all of this stuff is inside of me when I said in Zazen, isn't my true nature? He says, "Who are you? What is your name? Are you just living out your conditioning without any spaciousness to witness who's there and who you really are, the genuine?" This is our question. And so he speaks more about that. And then he says, so what I have to say to you this afternoon, Thurman says, young ladies and gentlemen, is what is your name? Who are you? And can you find a way to hear the sound of the genuine in yourself? There are so many noises going on inside of you, so many echoes of all sorts. But this is your assignment. So he gets down to it. Are you going to practice or not? There's that koan in Zen, we say, show me your face before your parents were born. Who are you really before all the conditioning? And those of you who have engaged in Chukai, you know, you get this Dharma name. Something's reflected back. And so just a few more statements of his, and I'll shut up here. He goes back. He says, there is something in every one of you that waits. Listen to the sound of the genuine in yourself. And if you cannot hear it, you will never find whatever it is for which you're searching. Now, thinking it a little more with me, however uncomfortable, you may be sitting there. I'm working here. So just do the best you can, because that's what I'm doing. So he's saying, I know this is hard. I understand that, but I'm doing my best. I'm working. So I was going to say, amen, brother. That's what I'm doing. Same here, you know, I'm doing my best. He says, the sound of the genuine is flowing through you. Your body is the body of the Buddha. That's the space you're sitting. The sound of the genuine is flowing through you. Don't be deceived and thrown off by all the noises that are part, even of your dreams, your ambitions, all these things, so that you don't hear the sound of the genuine in you. Because that is the only true guide that you will ever have. And if you don't have that, you don't have a thing. I just officiated at a Jukai ceremony in Madison for Shelley Winton. Some of you know her. And as I was thinking about this quote by Thurman, I remembered there's a line at one point in the Jukai ceremony that says, you have returned to your original nature, free from attachment and limited ways. From now on, awakening is your teacher. Buddha is your teacher. All beings are your teacher. Do not be fooled. Do not be deceived any longer. This is the path of mercy for all existence. This is what Thurman's saying. And then the original quote, as I live my life then, this is what I'm trying to fulfill, he says. I'm secure. I hear the sound of the genuine in myself. And having listened to that, I can become quiet enough, still enough to hear the sound of the genuine in you. What we're doing right now in inquiry is we listen to each other. Now, if I hear the sound of the genuine in me, and if you hear the sound of the genuine in you, it is possible for me to go down in me and come up in you. To go down in me and come up in you, breath after breath, breath after breath. So that when I look at myself through your eyes on the screen right now, I'm adding these words, of course, having made that pilgrimage, I see in me what you see in me. And the wall that separates and divides will disappear, and we will become one because the sound of the genuine makes the same music. And then he ended by saying, now this is your assignment. You can never say again that nobody told you. So what are your questions or your comments or what's moving in you now? This is the pilgrimage, going down in you and coming up in me.
Hello there.
There you are.
Mm-hmm. Hi.
Hey.
So, I'm I'm not coming with a question. I just wanted to share an experience with you. I don't mean just now. That's good too. But I wanted to share an experience to me, I mean, with you that I'm still, well, it's just so meaningful. And so I want to share
It's still resonating in you.
That's yeah. So the subject, I went to visit my mother this last week. I spent a whole week with her. That's I haven't spent that long with her for a very long time. And I went because she one of our caregivers left on a vacation and left her daughter to take care of my mom. So there's another caregiver, but anyway, so but she had this new one, and so I got a late call from my one of my brothers saying, you know, she's going crazy. She's run out of the room, and she's the security has her, and the caregiver is out in the hall. Anyway, so it was a big mess. So I said, okay, well, I'll come up there tomorrow. I was going to leave anyway the next week, but I decided to go the following day. Anyway, to make a long story short, so I spent a couple of first couple of days with her. And the weirdest thing I noticed for the first time in my life, I caught it right when it was happening, that I noticed she was wired and hyper and anxious. And I could feel all this anxiety in me. And I said, wait a minute, this isn't mine. I don't have anything to be anxious about here. This is the first time this has happened in live in the moment. And so I turned away, or I left and walked Ollie, and you know, I found this space and said, no, I'm good. Nothing wrong with me. She's just really anxious, but I've been joining her all my life in her, you know.
As if that was the measure of your love.
Correct. Correct. It was never, I learned it so early that I don't know. Anyway, there's no sense to be made out of it. So anyway, so I went back into the situation, and something happened. Well, I've been doing this for a while. I've started hugging her, you know, and saying, now hug me back, hug me good, make it hard. I want to feel you. You know, you need hugs. I need hugs. Let's do it together. So I've been doing that, but this time it was different. Instead, partly because she was freaked out a lot. And also she was wanting me to talk to her. She said, we need to talk. We need to talk. And I'm going, uh-oh, is this the, you know, end of life talk or what? But at any rate, what was happening to me is I found myself hugging her a lot. Or first thing in the morning, I'd go in and kiss her on the cheek. We don't do that in our family. We don't do that. Or I'd hold her hand. The rest of the time went like that, and it was so sweet. And it was and it's like a little kid, you know, that is throwing a tantrum. It's the same. And you just hold them close and then they're fine. And so it wasn't that I was thinking, this is what I need to do. It was just happening, you know? And I was really, it was so incredible because it was what both of us needed and have always needed, that both of us have not ever had. The mothering like that. And it was the most beautiful thing, Flint.
That's amazing and lovely as you were offering the regulation that you've always wanted, but actually she's also wanted.
Right.
And you have practiced enough to know that you had to step away from that anxiety that inhabits your body so easily because it's just been such a habit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of anxious, jittery, jumpy stuff. And it's like, wait a minute, I don't actually have to carry this. It's not mine. And then what came forward naturally in you was what was needed. That's the thing, it's natural, really.
Well, I the thing that comes to me as well is this is my practice. This has been my practice. This is what it's all about. And it also, Flint, comes from you and your modeling of being a parent and your care and the way you care for people. I mean, I need to mention that because it stems from that. And I want you to, I've said it other times, but I really want you to hear it and take it. And because I'm so grateful for that. It never would have happened otherwise.
And like you said, in those moments in which we're seeing each other in this way, reflecting each other, I don't usually think, oh, this is what needs to happen. It's just what emerges in the space when we're not, this is what they mean by hindrances. If there's no hindrance of self-centered dream, we respond with what's needed from our Buddha body, from our animal body, from our true nature, from our the genuine. So
Yeah.
it's a great example, and thank you for sharing it, and also the kindness that you're offering me in mentioning what you're mentioning.
Yeah, I don't. There's one more thing I want to say, and that is that I've always been very uncomfortable with the word love forever because it meant something I really didn't understand, or
Yeah.
as I was alluding to earlier, it really wasn't. And so. But now I don't feel that way, not just because of this incident, but because of where I am. I feel very comfortable with that word. And I know that I love other people, and presumably they love me.
Well, and that's what he's saying. This is your assignment, and now you've got it, and now you understand. Oh, this is your name. It's different than what you thought. Thank you so much.
You.
I can see it in you. I can see the shift. And this is our work together, you know, whatever I say work, it's what we're up to together, our assignment, Thurman says.
Welcome back.
Thank you
Hello.
so much. I know been a lot of water under your bridge since I saw you last.
Yeah, I spent a good deal of time in your county while you weren't there.
Well, and on the mainland too, I think you were in two different conferences, right?
I did two of them, yeah. And exhausting, but very, very good, very worthwhile. So in inimitable Flint Sparks fashion, you put the swizzle stick in and stirred it around again today. The beauty and the impact of that statement, and I wasn't aware of that either, of going down, 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 deep into yourself and coming up, and the other one. Whew.
No.
Yeah, I was about to turn the sound off because that one just, I mean, it took me over, quite literally. And I know I'll be sitting with that for more than 5 or 10 minutes. And how that recognition of yourself as well as the Buddha nature, which is in everyone and is the only nature actually, the profundity of that and the simplicity and clearness that expressed, was not only enlightening but nourishing and gratifying. And then I think I heard this right. The statement was that the measure of your love is how you're being, is how you're joined with someone else sometimes. And
It's like the Bodhisattva's definition.
can you say it one more time though?
Well, I'm not sure how I said it earlier. And were you saying it was one of Thurman's statements or something I said?
No, I think it was something that you had said, and I'll have to listen to the recording again, obviously.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what I said, but I'm assuming that what I was pointing to or trying to get close to is like. You know, Lori just said we have all these crazy ideas about what love is, but it's really a stance towards another. It's not a feeling. It's not
Okay,
an
yeah,
emotion.
that.
It's there are things that we map onto it because we want to feel good, But really, it's a stance towards each other, and it's like the bodhisattvas. It's like I'm willing to extend myself to you in a compassionate embrace in a certain way, for your well-being and benefit, and I'll treat myself that way too. I'm included in that love. But it's a stance we take, not a feeling.
And within that stance, without the feeling or the preferences or the expectations, it's where that going down and coming up has its truest reflection. Okay. Because I just want to let Laurie know that she's not an island in terms of understanding or trying to figure out what the heck love is
No,
over
that's
the years.
marvelous. Yeah. That's
Yeah.
why I made that statement that I first read it in Norman Fisher's book on Training and Compassion, where he said, if you want to understand suffering, you're gonna have to learn to love. If you want to understand love, you have to face suffering. These are not two things. It's what Kim Nichelle was really pushing me on when we were in the retreat in Madison. This is not a decision between fear and love. We're in an ocean of fear and an ocean of love all the time. They're not two things. They're ways that we're looking at the same thing.
And once you're wet, you're wet when you're in the ocean. So I just wanted to be able to say thank you for all of that. And again, just amazing clarity and depth.
Thank you for, when we make that pilgrimage, he calls it, go down and meet, then you're showing me who I am, and hopefully I'm showing you who you are. That was his conclusion.
And that's the better way of not getting caught in ego stuff and being able to have that deep thank you connected to that, and it's a pure thank you.
You get the wetness feels a little bit like gratitude now.
Yeah.
You.
Thank you. We have Dennis next.
Hi, Flint.
Hey, didn't I just see you?
Yes, you did. Okay, when we were in high school and, our late teens, we talked about genuineness. We were trying to be genuine. We had that idea. And in fact, there was an expression in my high school about so-and-so is such a poser, meaning not very genuine, just, and so I think, well, I love what this Thurman is asking of us, but my question is, how can we be confident that we are genuine? Like it's just another practice, I guess, but I love how I'm gonna go find that. I love what it said.
That's easy to find, certainly. This Howard Thurman Spelman College, that thing, it'll come up many, many ways. I think using the term that it was the measure of it, or your question is, how do we know it? I don't think it's a self-reflective thing. I don't think we can know that we have met the genuine. I think it's in the response we get from life. Otherwise, it's filtered through self-perceptions, but and it doesn't have mean we're elevated or lauded or anything like that. I just mean, what do you notice? What happens? And it's kind of like that thing I've said before, when someone asked Suzuki Roshi about how he helped his students with the precepts. He said, do you train them? Do you follow? How do you encourage them? Do you do that? And he said, no, I don't do that. I just watch how they treat each other.
Yeah.
It's not really about the person, it's about the effect they have.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a, I want to add something. This is mine, because a couple of people have asked at different times. If there are people who wear a rakusu or people who wear clothing like this, they think, oh, is that, are you posing? Could be, absolutely. You're a good, Irish guy. I'm Catholic. You know how you can pose in these things. But actually, if everybody's wearing exactly the same thing, it begins to erase personality. But then your individual stuff starts showing up because a lot of the unique expression is taken away. And then you're actually a little more naked because, oh, if everybody's asked to do the same thing and then you see the differences, oh, but there's self stuff coming through. Does that make any sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, we had to wear uniforms in school and stuff. And it actually, I think there's some advantages to
Yeah.
everybody being dressed the same.
Yeah, some way, so. And then everybody does it their way, but then you get to see them, see? Yeah. Thanks for your question. It's really a good one, Dennis. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Flynn.
We have Kathy. You
I
go.
just saw you too.
It's so much fun to see you again so soon. I love it. One of the last inquiries I was at, Josh was leading it, and he offered Suzuki Roshi's quote about finding calmness in activity and something like activity in calmness. And so I've been practicing with calmness and activity in activity, and I've noticed every time I remind myself of that, I wind up taking a deep breath.
Oh, your body has its own way of knowing what you mean.
And then today during Zazen, you said, I think you did, to watch your breath
Take
and
care of your breath.
take care of my breath. So I said, oh, that's what happens when I bring calmness to activity. And you said, take care of your posture. And I thought, it just came to me, that's not only in Zazen.
Of
That's
course.
when we stand up, how we present ourselves in the world. And then I just and then you said that something about from Thurman's quote, it's about the st our stance towards each other. And I thought, well, that's taken care of. That's what happens when we take care of our posture.
That's right. It's not just our physical posture, of course, but that's how we practice it in Zazen so that we remain upright in all ways, not just physically.
And it just those streams just all kind of came
Oh,
together, and I wanted to
beautiful.
share that.
That's beautiful. Yeah,
Thank you.
that's my hope that they would come together in those ways. So thanks for reflecting me back to me that way, and I'm reflecting you back to
Absolutely.
you that
That's right.
way. Wonderful.
Thank you.
You.
We have Mala.
Good afternoon.
Hi. I'm on the precipice, which is a much more melodramatic word than necessary, of a decision that's going to affect some people in the Sangha who I love and respect very much. And I'm hearing from your message the sound of the genuine in me, which is what has always been my goal in life, is to find the genuine in me, my authentic Buddha nature. And I have been a nonconformist my whole life.
I've noticed.
I know you know that, but I'm still waiting for the sounds of the genuine in myself, which you talked about, and Thurman, whose name I didn't quite get.
Howard Thurman, not Robert Thurman. He's a Buddhist teacher. Howard Thurman.
Howard Thurman. Okay, thank you. Thank you. The sounds of the genuine in myself with humility, empathy, and kindness. not like grumpiness or irritation or anything.
You might be generally grumpy or irritated at times, but what happens
It's
is
true. That's true. That's true.
you have the space to not identify with it or fight it too much. You go, oh, there's grumpiness moving through this.
Exactly. Yeah.
And to see that in others too.
Yes.
So there's
And
difficulty.
love and accept it.
Right, be the larger container that can hold it all so that there's composure within the suffering.
Yeah.
And that seems to be one of the edges for you, the composure within suffering.
Oh my goodness, yes, the edges, so many edges. My life says, as Thurman said, I won't waste time on idle talk. Well, that's a little bit extreme as well. Precipice at the beginning of this, I'm on the precipice of something. My life is waiting for the sounds of the genuine in myself with humility, empathy, and kindness. I'm taking all of this from what you just said because it meant so much to me. And there is something in me that continues to wait for that sign of the genuine.
Well, let's
And if I ignore, but if I ignore this insistence, this determination on permission to be different, to be a nonconformist, to potentially rattle some people's cages, will I be caught in the self-centered dream of fighting some imaginary battle and never know who I really am?
That's a really good question. If you're caught in that, you'll be caught in that. If you're not, you won't be. But luckily, you've practiced enough and done enough work on yourself to know to ask the question. You're saying, oh, this is an interesting precipice. I could slide into being self-centered and righteousness. I'm right and they're wrong and they can't make me that. Or you could slide into an unhappy conformity, and you know what that feels like. Or you could stay upright in the care and respect that you have for others and for you, and say, "This is where I am. I'm finding my way. Help me find my way. I want to help you find your way." It's what you and I are doing right now. So if I go down in me to find the most genuine, non-reactive, just open space in me, and you go down in you, and you find that, then if I come up in you and I let you come up in me, whatever that means, and we look at each other now, then when I see in your face is you reflecting me back, and hopefully what you see in my face is me reflecting you back. And then we're in a place that's a different word than conformist or nonconformist. It's like it's workable. This is a place that's workable. I don't know where it'll go. I don't know what my shape will be. I don't know what yours will be, but it's workable because I don't want to hurt you and I don't think you want to hurt me. And we're both trying to find the same thing and we might do it in different ways. But there's no need to fight for freedom. Because we
No, and what I plan and hope to be able to do effectively is to replace your face with the faces of other people who I love, other
perfect.
people who I'm on the precipice of potentially annoying,
Yeah,
whatever.
just warn them. It's a
Yeah.
way. It's a way of saying there are many parts in me, like the guy that was disturbed. And if you would give me a little space for some of them to speak, I know it's not the genuine necessarily, but I'll find the genuine if I can let all these speak in this container of our relationship.
Yeah.
Then maybe we can find our way together. And you'll have some parts in you that probably want to speak. But if we don't identify with any of them too strongly, we can find a greater space of composure that will offer us a way forward.
Yes. And I love everyone. Respect and acceptance of all different styles and personalities is really at the bottom of this.
And that's what we'll just keep practicing. But I also have to practice my goodness on time. So we're
Oh
starting now.
my God,
It's okay. That's my job. And so
Thank
now we're
you.
gonna,
Thank you.
sure, we're gonna do our final chant, which is our reminder of exactly what you were just talking about. And so we'll say, caught in the self-centered dream, only suffering. Holding to self-centered thoughts, exactly the dream. Each moment, life as it is, the only teacher, being just this moment, compassion's way. Caught in the self-centered dream, only suffering. Holding to self-centered thoughts, exactly the dream. Each moment, life as it is, the only teacher, being just this moment, compassion's way. Caught in the self-centered dream, only suffering, holding to self-centered thoughts, exactly the dream. Each moment, life as it is, the only teacher, being just this moment, compassion's way.
Thank you so much, Flint, for coming and smiling at us all and for all the extra that you just threw in. Thank you so much. And thank you all for being here as well. Thank you so much. And if you'd like to offer dana to Flint and or to Appomattox, then please do go to appomattox.org and you'll find a place there to offer dana. Thank you all so much for being here. And if you'd like to continue with me and others for a further 30 minutes, pop yourself into gallery view and I'll be with you in just a moment. Thank you all so much. Thank you.